Hello and welcome to an Inside College Hockey podcast for February 14th, 2007. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, ECAC Hockey League writer and podcast host, joined by Mike Eidelbus, a senior editor at Inside College Hockey and columnist, as well as Jeff Howe, our Hockey East writer. How are you guys doing today?
It's Valentine's Day. We're doing wonderful.
Yes. And happy Valentine's Day to Christina Aguilera, podcast listener. Let's start right away with Beanspot stuff. Jeff, you were there covering it for Inch. Fantastic work, as always. And can you save us some money and kind of write this from home in the future, because the same thing happens every year?
Yeah, I guess I can just, you know, I'll write next year's one tomorrow night. Although, actually, next year should be a little more interesting because BU and BC play each other in the first round. So there's going to be somebody new there in the final. But, yeah, I mean, I can also save you the money and tell you not to watch the first two periods of the Monday night championship game. I mean, they were two pretty decent periods, but once that third period started heating up after Gervie's goal, I mean, that was some of the most fun 25 minutes of hockey I've seen all season.
How was John Curry?
John Curry is the only reason BU won that game. I mean, BC absolutely peppered him after Gervie scored that goal there. I think about a minute and a half, 2 minutes into the third period. Curry made, I think, like seven or eight saves in the third that a lesser goalie would let in, you know, nine times out of ten. He continued to play phenomenal hockey. I mean, BC could have won that game 5-1, but John Curry was amazing between the pipes. And, you know, considering he was the Beanpot MVP and the Eberle Trophy winner for the best save percentage by a goalie, he had a .985 save percentage in the tournament, which broke a record. His career record, he set a career record for a .958 save percentage in the tournament, and he improved to 5-0 in the Beanpot. So he was not only great on Monday night, but he set some pretty prestigious records over the tournament's 55-year history as well.
Yeah, that is certainly not to be denied, and we recognized Curry's recent play and BU's excellent season in this week's Hobie Tracker at Inch, and as is always the case, we got some reader feedback on that, which was fine. We appreciate the feedback.
No, absolutely. You're being awfully
kind.
Go ahead.
It's hard for me to believe that I always find it humorous when an email that comes from number one insert team name fan, at email.com accuses writers of having a bias.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I guess to be a little bit more specific, we got an email from obviously a Boston College supporter saying that, I wish I could remember the exact term that they used to describe our regard for Curry, but just said that, you know, he's in, basically the emailer said he's a sound positional goalie with below average reflexes, and you know that may be the case, and
plays behind a team that.
He plays behind a team that's defensive minded. That may be all well and good and fine too, but let's be honest. I mean, he won, and as much as us non-New Englanders or non-Boston area residents on this podcast like to minimize the Beanpot as being an overrated experience, I mean, obviously for the teams that that play in it. You know, it's very important, and it's a pressure cooker. And as we saw on Monday night, this kid came and responded. And I think that's the kind of performance that you expect from a Hobie Baker winner. Our emailer went on to say that Corey Schneider, is a far more talented goalie, and I don't think that anybody would really deny that. But talent does not necessarily equate value. And I think that the Hobie Baker doesn't necessarily go to the most talented player. I think it goes to the player who's, at least in my opinion, it says it goes to the best player in the nation, but I think that there has to be some tie into value there, value to his team. And, right now, who's more valuable to their team than Curry? I don't think anybody is.
If they were an MVP award in college hockey, I don't even think this would be a race. I mean, Curry would take that hands down. I've been saying that for a few weeks now, since BU started winning, because Curry completely saved BU's season when they couldn't score more than one or two goals a night. He was getting ties out of the team. He was beating teams 1-0, 2-1, tying 1-1, tying 2-2, when the team just couldn't score. And, the team won a game 1-0 a month ago. I can't remember who they beat. But John Curry went into the locker room and flipped out at his teammates because they were all, they were all happy that, they won a game and, they got their 2 points in Hockey East. But Curry was mad because, he needs these guys to start scoring a few more goals for him if they have any plans for early April. So I think that, when you say that Corey Schneider's a more talented goalie and all that other stuff, last year you could probably make a good case for that. But when your team doesn't play much, if any, defense in front of that goalie, then it doesn't matter how talented he is because his numbers are going to plummet, because of that. And right now that's been BC's problem this season, is their lack of defense in front of Curry. Front of Schneider.
Yeah, here's the problem. This writer who we anonymously emails, and we do appreciate it. We love the stuff. Very well written and funny. And there was a tongue-in-cheek tone to this. It wasn't a total blast-off thing. He cited Curry's pro potential. He cited Curry's incoming status to BU as a non-scholarship player. And that's all fine. But you know what? Professional potential and, how you're thought of by NHL scouts and college recruiters, that doesn't matter when, I'll throw these out there right now. John Curry leads the nation in shutouts with 6. He ranks 2nd in the nation in goals against average at 1.76 goals against, and he ranks 3rd nationally in save percentage with a .936 save rate. So he's having an unbelievable year, and I also looked at the Hobie Baker criteria as defined by the award, and it's strength of character on and off the ice, contributes to the integrity of the team, and displays outstanding skill. Consideration should be given to scholastic achievement and sportsmanship, and he must be a full-time student, NCAA eligible, all that kind of stuff, is the last clause. So all those things, Curry, I think, stacks up pretty well.
He certainly does. He's a great person off the ice. He's been phenomenal on the ice, extremely valuable to his team, more valuable than anybody, at least in Hockey East. And his numbers are right up there, too.
Plus, you were a former voter for this award. Did you put any stock in that sportsmanship, scholastic, and integrity of team and strength of character stuff, or did you kind of just go with the hockey thing?
Honestly, the hockey stuff is, you kind of start out with the numbers. But there were a couple cases, and I can't speak specifically to, which year or years it was. And I voted for each of the previous 3 years. So the winners were Lessard, Sertich, and Carl. And I voted for, they were the number one people on my ballot in each of those 3 years. But when it came close, when I really struggled with one or the other, some of the things that I heard from coaches and others about kids off the ice, and the things that the kind of teammate they maybe were in the locker room, or their reputation off the ice, certainly factor in. Again, that's only in when I had a very close.
It was more of a tiebreaker.
Right, exactly. You know, and you look at last year, for example, I mean, with the top three, I mean, they were those three guys, Collins, Carl, and Elliott, were pretty clear-cut, and, you know, the consensus was that they were good guys on and off the ice. But, yeah, you know, when it was a close call, I mean, that definitely factors in, and I think that this year it's going to be a close call. I mean, there's nobody, you know, as we were talking before we got started here, it's probably the weakest crop of Hobie candidates. And I don't mean weakest in terms of they're not good players, because obviously they are, but weakest in terms of nobody has really outstanding credentials. I would say probably going back to about 94 when Chris Marinucci from Minnesota Duluth won it, and he played for a Minnesota Duluth team that, quite frankly, was not very good. You know, we're looking back, almost 12 or 13 years now. That's just kind of not a strong crop of candidates.
What about the Mike Motto year?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know,
that up 2000.
There were some good candidates, I thought, in that mix that year.
Comrie, Gianta, Horkoff, Andy McDonald, Jeff Panzer, Steve Reinprecht, among others.
Yeah, you know, Steve Reinprecht was really good that year.
And he got hurt.
And, you know, the one guy that's not mentioned that I think probably should have won it was Danny Heatley. Danny Heatley was a freshman that year, and I think that he was the best player in the nation.
Yeah, I saw him play that year.
And he was pretty darn good. I mean,
he was real good. Yeah.
Obviously. And he was better as a freshman than he was as a sophomore. And, you know, that's – and then, you know, Wisconsin, obviously, you know, them losing out early probably didn't help Reinprecht's chances either.
Yeah, that was and the year he missed some games.
And he did. You're right. He did miss some games that year. But, you know, for my money, that – and this is all, you know, revisionist history right now, but I would have – if I would have had a vote that year, I would have voted for Heatley. And he was no
yeah,
– I thought he was no-brainer the best player in the nation that year.
He was very, very good.
Yeah.
Also, 04, which is the year that Lessard won it, Jan Denis, Bochensky, Ballard were in the mix, but and Zach Parisi. But your other five were Derek Edwardson from Miami, Thomas Polk, Steve Saviano, Jim Slater, and Tony Vose. I don't think there's a lot of sizzle there.
No.
But that's it.
But
it
I
is
think
what
when
is.
You go back and I mean, once again, you look at North Dakota, and you know, Parisi was probably the number two candidate, or at least in most people's minds. And I was a voter that year, and I, you know, it came to when it came time for me to fill in my one and my two. And, you know, you have to vote for a top five. You know, it came down to me to Lessard versus Parisi, and I chose Lessard because I felt that if you take him off that team and you take Parisi off North Dakota, which team will be worse for losing that person, that player, and I thought it was Duluth losing Lessard. So,
and I think the standings over the last two seasons have shown that you were correct.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, the other thing that didn't help the Parisi that year was they lost to Denver in the regional final. And Denver went on to win the national championship, but you know, again, all that happened. Right before the
vote. And
when
are the votes submitted? After the regionals? After the conference tournament? After the regular season?
After the regionals.
Okay.
When the votes are submitted. It's in that...
10-day gap.
It's literally right after the regionals. So I think, the, you know,
that
the regionals
Monday?
The regionals will wrap up on a Sunday. The voters... people probably don't know how this works, so this is, you know, maybe new information for a lot of people, but, the you know, the regionals will wrap up on that Sunday. And usually all the voters get together on a Monday or a Tuesday via conference call and discuss the merits of the 10 candidates. And then the day after that conference call, the ballots are due. And then
there you go.
And then shortly thereafter, they release the names of the top three, And then about 9 days later, they announced the winner.
Yeah, and everybody goes to the Frozen Four and has fun.
Yeah,
there's no fun at the Frozen Four.
That's been known to happen.
Yeah,
I've heard it.
That's
I've heard,
all good stuff.
But anyways, that's how the Hobie works, and so you can see where if some teams, for lack of a better term, flop in the first or second round or of the regional, how it can affect a player's stature and his candidacy.
And then, therefore, us elevating Curry on the basis of strong wins in an important tournament, you know, kind of mimics the Hobie process.
Exactly. So. I would agree.
So there you go.
I don't know if
David
we,
Brown,
I don't know
obviously.
If, I don't know if we resolved anything there, but at least we shed a little bit of light on it.
Well, what we did was what the Hobie tracker is intended to do. It just stimulate conversation and
we're
put out different ideas and see what's important, what's not. And
we're taking the pulse.
Things. Yeah, man. Just something to talk about. Take
right.
it easy, fan.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. I mean, hey, Corey Schneider might not be in the mix this year for the Hobie, but he's gonna be a rich guy at some point in time here down the road, be it this
yeah.
summer or next summer. I mean, he'll.
I bet he didn't really like that Luongo signing, though.
Yeah.
Schneider.
Yeah, you're probably right. But what? How old is Luongo? 20? Is he 27 or is he older than that?
He's going to be starting goalie for the next 50 years of the game.
He's going to be like
I hope.
He's going to be like Gump Worsley.
I hope.
He'll be like 2038, and he'll be playing with. Marcus Naslin Jr.
Yeah. Let's get back to Hockey Eastland, Rook, and look forward this time. We've got some really big games on tap this weekend with Maine and BC playing and UNHBU. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah, we are. This is probably, you know, the best. This is definitely the best weekend of Hockey East action so far this year. I mean, obviously because we're winding down the stretch. But UNH can clinch Hockey East. It's playing number two, or, you know, second place, BU. They are home and home starting in Durham Friday, and they're going to BU Saturday. And UNH, with 3 points, can win the regular season title, which I'm not completely sure would be a good thing for them to lock it up with a few weekends left, but that at least, you know, keeps the storylines going. And then Maine travels down to BC. They're the third and fourth place teams in the league right now, so that'll be huge for, you know, one of the teams. If one of the teams can sweep, and obviously it's at BC, so it bodes well for them, but if one of the teams can sweep, they'll virtually, you know, lock up home ice, you would think. And then right behind it is UMass and Vermont, who are the fifth and sixth place teams. So there is a lot of room this weekend for some teams to jump up in the standings, fall back in the standings, but especially where third through sixth or seventh place in the league is so tight. But, yeah, it's a pretty good weekend of hockey over here in the eastern part of the country.
We've talked a lot about the goaltenders in that league all season long. I mean, most of the discussion tonight has been about Curry and Schneider, but Kevin Regan at New Hampshire and Joe Fallon and Ben Bishop and those kinds of guys, and John Quick have had unbelievable seasons, and we know a lot about the forwards in that league, the Torrey Mitchells and Michel Levier's and Teddy Purcells and Boyle and Yip and all kinds of guys, but we don't talk a lot about Hockey East defensemen. What can you tell us about some of the top blue liners in that league?
Well, the guys who have really impressed me, and, you know, maybe this says a lot about Curry, but Kevin Schaefer and Sean Sullivan at BU have been, like, a really, really good defenseman, you know. The thing that impresses me mostly about those two guys is the way they kill penalties. I mean, Schaefer has, I don't even know how many times I've seen him take a puck, you know, off the mouth, you know, diving head first to make stops so it doesn't reach Curry. And Sullivan does the same thing. Those guys both play with a lot of grit, a lot of heart, and those two have been impressive. Brad Flashens is also another pretty solid defenseman. He's a big reason why, you know, they've been able to make such a, I mean, they're still a great offense up at UNH, but they're also, they also have their best set of blue liners that they've had in a long time, too. And you got McCauley up at Vermont, and Motherwell has been somewhat of a disappointment for BC. I mean, he came on really strong last year, especially towards the end of the season, but he's had his spurts over at the Heights. And, you know, UMass has a couple solid guys in front of Quick. They've got, you know, Topher Bevis, David Leedier, and a young guy, Martin Nollet, who they're really excited about. So there are a good crop. And, you know, May has a few pretty solid players, too.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the Black Bears here. Plus, I don't know if you saw any of this on TV, but I watched Saturday's Maine win when Dave Wilson got a lot of the credit and was the Inch Shop Player of the Week for our site, kind of came in reserve of Ben Bishop and had a spectacular weekend in goal. Wilson's a guy that not a lot of people knew about heading into last weekend, but put himself into the national conscious with his effort. And watching that game, what I was really impressed is that Wilson was good, certainly, and made some big stops late, but Maine put him in a position to be very successful. I thought their overall team defense and discipline was very, very strong in that 1-0 win. They did a lot of good stuff as far as D-zone coverage and actually defending in all three zones, you know, their forecheck and then in the neutral zone and in the D-zone. Not a lot of blown assignments, and they were made good decisions with the puck and got it off the glass when they should have and headmanned the puck when they should have. And I liked Maine's overall team defense. It was my first time being able to see the Black Bears, and you wonder about their offensive talent and those kinds of things, but being able to see them play that type of game was certainly entertaining for me. So I liked that part of Maine.
Maine, you know, another historically strong defensive team. They were solid last year, and this year they've been inconsistent, which, you know, makes you scratch your head. But I think what it was the fact that these guys, you know, thought to themselves, we've got Dave Wilson and we've got Vermont for two games at Alphon. You know, if we don't step up tonight and tomorrow night, then we may not have many more nights left this season where we're going to have the chance to step up. And when Bishop comes back, and, you know, chances are he will be back in net for the BC series, if these guys continue to play with that sense of purpose, then Maine is going to be an extremely difficult team to stop down the stretch.
So we'll talk about CCHA a little bit now. One thing I've found, and kind of our Hobie theme, I guess, on this podcast, is that CCHA certainly has a lot of names out there who are viable candidates with Brown at Notre Dame and Davis at Miami and Hensick and Porter at Michigan and now Lurg at Michigan State. You know, you've got a lot of guys that are worthy of individual honors, but outside of Notre Dame, the teams kind of seem to be throwing opportunities away to make some noise. So you've got Michigan State blows a 3-0 lead against Michigan and settles for a tie. They lose at Ferris on Tuesday night. You've got a Michigan team that comes back to that point against Michigan State, but the night before they had lost to Bowling Green, a very, very poor Bowling Green team. What's going on out there with those teams?
I think you basically hit the nail on the head in that, you know, outside of Notre Dame, which has been consistently good, all season long, and recently, until they lost Tuesday night at Ferris State, Michigan State, nobody's been able to put together a decent run, and Michigan has kind of shown that they've had the ability to win a few in a row, but then, you know, they seem to fall back with a couple of losses, or, you know, two losses and a tie or something like that. You know, the Michigan State thing, I think the Saturday night game surprises me a little bit, just because Jeff Lurg, the goaltender, has been playing so well, and he faced a ton of shots that night at Joe Louis Arena. I think it was something like 47 saves that he made, or 48 saves, just a ridiculous amount, but it surprised me that they let that game slip away because they had been playing so well in front of him, and the, you know, kind of ironed out their problems on defense and that type of thing. So that surprised me. Losing last night, or losing Tuesday night at Ferris, didn't surprise me as much. I mean, it had been they're in the midst, Michigan State, of you know, not necessarily the toughest portion of their schedule, but they've got a stretch of 5 games in 8 days right now that they're in the middle of. You know, it started last Friday against Ferris, and though they go played Michigan Saturday, then they played Ferris again in Big Rapids on Tuesday, and now they've got another home and home coming up this weekend with Western Michigan. And, you know, at this point in the season, that's a lot of games, and those, you know, the legs start to get tired, and it's tough for guys to regroup from that kind of pounding. And you know, thankfully for Michigan State, odds are they're going to end up with a top four spot and probably get a bye through the first round of the CCHA playoffs, because after this stretch, they're going to need it. And then they've got another home and home to wrap up with Bowling Green the last weekend of February. So, but you know, you could kind of see, just judging from the way they played this weekend against Ferris at home, winning that in overtime, and then squandering the 3-goal lead against Michigan, ending up with a tie. You could kind of see that Tuesday's result was on the horizon. And then, of course, they got Western Michigan coming up, and Western Michigan very good against ranked teams in their own building. So, that said, you know, it's kind of Notre Dame and Chase at this point in time, and I don't think it's going to be the way it looks. Is it's not going to be a case of which team will take control, but behind Notre Dame. But for those four first-round buys, you know, obviously Notre Dame's got one locked up, but it more or less seems like which team can hang on long enough and get one of those spots.
In the ECAC Hockey League, St. Lawrence is the first team to clinch a top four spot. The Saints are in first place, a little surprised to be there. They are surprised, as well as some people around the league. But they're kind of running with that Notre Dame MO in this league, just getting their points every weekend and going from there. What they've done is played a very difficult non-league schedule. So their non-league record is not very good, but the quality of teams they've played is extremely high. They've played Michigan State, New Hampshire, North Dakota at the Dartmouth tournament, I think.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right. Didn't they play? Yeah, they played Boston U at that tournament too, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yeah. They beat BU in overtime.
In that disputed game.
Yeah. So you've got a St. Lawrence team, also Providence, Niagara. All of a sudden, that loss to Niagara, you know, it doesn't look so bad, even though it was back in October. Miami, in BU North Dakota in that tournament, they've played some outstanding teams. So the Saints are a team that is really good, and I think what they've done is taking care of business in the league, and that's important. If you don't know about Drew Bagnell, we talked a little bit about him in the ECAC Hockey League notebook last week. Get to know him. Hobie candidate, probably not. All-American candidate, absolutely. He's a spectacular defenseman on a very good team. And certainly should be in the mix for postseason honors.
Is that foreshadowing?
Foreshadowing what?
Are you foreshadowing that he's going to... I'm just saying, are you foreshadowing that he's going to be an All-American?
I think he deserves it.
Okay.
I think he deserves All-American consideration. That's all I'm saying.
Are you the president of his fan club now?
No. No.
Okay. Wondering, since you were the president of the Noah Welch fan club there for a couple years, and
I certainly was. That accusation was made.
Not that there's
and
anything
I, and
wrong
I did
with
not
it.
Deny it.
No, you did not. Not at all.
He's great.
He was a good he was a good hockey player for Harvard, and he used a wood stick, which always helps.
Yes, he did. I'd like to share this haiku that I wrote for the podcast. Jeff, you still there?
Oh, I am. I'm on the edge of my seat waiting for this poetry to take place.
All right. Here it is. Second year on staff, but his nickname doesn't change. Happy birthday, Rook.
Your birthday is on Valentine's Day?
No, it was a couple days ago. Thanks, Gladys. I appreciate it.
All right. Jeff Howe, happy belated birthday.
How old are you? 19?
Yeah, I actually just got my driver's license.
You got your permit.
Yeah, me and my old man are going to go out driving this weekend.
As soon as the roads are plowed.
Yeah. Hey, can you imagine getting your learner's permit in Boston?
I think you have to be like 30 to
I would have shot myself. I got my permit in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, for crying out loud, and I still got like a 76. Good gravy. I would have got like a 4 in Boston. Somebody would have died.
Boston is a fun place to drive.
Oh, yeah. Anybody that's ridden...
It's an even better place to get lost.
Anybody that's ridden with Gladdy in Boston knows how much fun it is.
Yeah, it's good times.
It's a pleasure.
Good times.
You don't really go to your hotel more so much as you kind of circle it.
Yeah. And then, exactly.
We could put in a holding pattern. But we love Boston. It's a very good town.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Rook, the correct answer to Bus's question about how old are you? You stay still young enough to flirt with teenage girls.
No.
Well, I will not go on the record as saying that.
That's a good call. Oh, boy. We don't need to...
Yeah, that's all I need to come back and haunt me.
Yeah, we don't need to see you on, like... We don't need to see you on NBC Dateline. Getting set up by... Perverted justice.
Well, Rook was in college last year.
Basketball team.
Wait, you were in college last year? No, you weren't.
I was.
Oh, you were. That's right. But you were like...
He was a veteran.
You're like Cherokee Park.
He redshirted.
You're like Cherokee Park. You were there for like 7 years.
Yeah, I had to take a little redshirt. Medical redshirt.
He redshirted.
Medical redshirt.
Yeah,
I had to take a medical redshirt too. I had narcolepsy. Couldn't get up for classes. Anyways.
Hey, but we got our degrees.
Yeah.
There you go.
At least I got one of them. Well, I guess I got both of them. One's still locked. My one at Denver's still locked up. Because I haven't paid my parking tickets. I'm not kidding.
That's all right.
Well, I mean, if you're going for a job interview, you don't need to see it. It's not like you got to bring it in. Show it to them. I got the transcript.
That's true.
So,
that is true.
Stupid Denver. Keep my diploma, whatever it's called, my degree, my sheepskin.
Well, there you go.
Anyway,
there you go.
I digress.
Yes. We have reached the time of the podcast we affectionately refer to as podcast deterioration. Anything else to comment on in the world of other?
We haven't talked about the WCHA.
That's fine. They get enough attention.
I was going to say, how dare you? How dare you? We haven't talked about...
Our WCHA correspondent is on another assignment this evening.
He's on assignment.
He's
trying to make sure the kids don't burn the house down.
He's on a field trip. They're on a field trip.
He's watching the Wilds.
Yes, the Wilds are playing the Vancouvers tonight at the...
Excel Center.
Corporate arena. A couple big series, obviously, in the WCHA this weekend. Your Huskies go to Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yeah.
In a trap series, they get the Badgers, and then after that, they've got the Gophers and North Dakota. So hopefully the Huskies are not looking ahead. Well, maybe for Wisconsin fans, hopefully they are. But so that's a big one. And then Minnesota is at Colorado College. Colorado College apparently seems to have forgotten how to score. Minnesota absolutely, and, you know, granted, Minnesota was playing a lot better in late October than they are now, but Minnesota absolutely throttled Colorado College back then, the last time these two teams met in Minneapolis. So, I don't know. I don't hold out a lot of hope for Colorado College this weekend, but then again, which Gopher team will show up? Who knows?
Yeah, CC has 11 goals in his last six games. One of those was a 4-2 win over Wisconsin.
11 goals in their last six games.
Yes.
And six of them came in that Wisconsin series.
That is true.
So that the other four, they combined for five. Not the time of year you really want to forget. And Matt Zaba, to his credit, has played really well. But, you know, as we've discussed in the past with Wisconsin, how long can you expect your goalie to carry your team if he's not getting any support?
Yeah. Taking a quick look at CC's results this season, they've scored a lot more goals at home than they have on the road.
Yeah,
it's almost a clear, I mean, outside of a weekend series at Minnesota Duluth when they had seven goals in two games, a lot of ones and twos and zeros on the road. So CC is finding a way to score at home, and that's where they play Minnesota, but then their last three of their last four games are on the road. So they'll have to get that part of their game figured out a little bit. St. Cloud State, as we mentioned, very, very difficult close to the schedule at Madison for two, home and home with Minnesota, and then they host North Dakota, who could be playing for their certainly playing for a WCHA playoff top five spot on that last weekend of the year. Also could be playing for NCAA tournament criteria. So the Huskies have I guess we'll get to see how good they really are down the stretch. But that's the kind of stretch that could set them up for a tough run. You know, that could take a lot out of them. And say they even play 500 down the way. If they fall, or they're still in third place in the WCHA, that's a tougher first-round matchup, you know. So I think it would behoove the Huskies to get some points and get some wins here, because things could unravel.
Well, especially at Wisconsin this weekend, although Wisconsin looked pretty good last Friday against Alaska Anchorage. They played pretty well, as well as they've played in some time, and you really can't even throw that win against Minnesota in there because they, you know, they played pretty good defense, but still had a hard time scoring. But you know, Wisconsin's still in that mix for a top five spot. You know, as we've discussed, you know, they haven't had the year obviously that they had last year, but you've got Brian Elliott, and if you're going to run him out there every night in goal, anything can happen. And you know, that's one of those teams that if you're in that 5-6 game or even a 4-7, I don't think you want any part of Wisconsin knowing what Elliott is capable of doing. And I think there's going to be a few of those matchups. I think in as we get into playoff time here in various leagues, you know, around the country, I think UMass obviously is actually basically any team in Hockey East is capable of having their goalie steal a game or two, pretty much. At least that's the way it seems.
That's certainly true. But even back to Wisconsin, I mean, you never want anything to do with any team that just won the national championship.
No.
Regardless of how down they've been.
Right. Right.
Going back to some early podcast discussion, can anyone name Boston University's last Hobie finalist?
Oh, God.
Sully?
Mick something.
Smitty?
Chris Drury?
No, the year after Drury won it, they had one finalist. So there's a hint. 1999.
I'm thinking too hard. Who is it?
Michelle Larocque.
Ah.
99. But that's 8 years ago.
Bunny.
That's a long time.
Was his nickname Bunny?
I don't think so.
Should have been.
Yeah.
You know, yes, one more thing. I know as we're kind of winding down here, but you mentioned North Dakota, you know, maybe having a battle for their NCAA tournament lives, although judging from what I like to call the computer rankings, for lack of a better term, I know it's called something else, but I think that I don't know if we're allowed to say that on the air or during the podcast. Anyways,
say what?
I don't know. I don't
know. Pairwise rankings?
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I was just being. I was being.
I just said it.
I was being facetious.
Oh, I think the pairwise rankings are being facetious.
You don't like that kind of stuff. You should go on record as saying that.
Well, I will say, I will say this: the system is used to evaluate teams at the end of the year, to treat it as a moving target, as a scale where each game affects the next and the last, is not the right way to do it. Those criteria are season-long criteria, not just what happened this week. So when people get in a big huff because I played St. Mary's Tech and it hurt my strength of schedule and now I'm down below, you know, Boise A&M, you know, that's not the right way to look at it. It's got to be evaluated at the end of the year.
Right.
That's one thing. And I think the criteria, when you look at it from a season-long basis, actually makes a lot of sense. You know, overall strength schedule, overall, you know, winning percentage, you know, those kinds of things. So, but seeing Michigan Tech rated 18th, you know, and Cornell tied for 18th with Michigan Tech, I don't know. I don't think that's a real good system.
Well, and I think, you know, the last time I looked, and I haven't, you know, I can't remember if I looked. I obviously must have looked last night or Tuesday night. You know, Michigan State is tied for 13th, I think. Or tied for, you know, for lack of a better term, they're on the bubble. Well, I just, you know, from what I've seen from Michigan State, you know, especially prior to their loss to Ferris State on Tuesday night, they're not the 13th best team in the nation. I think we can all agree that they're appreciably better than that. You know, same with Boston College. Yeah, Boston College has had their ups and downs, but to me, they're a tournament team. Maybe that's subject for debate, but. Yeah, but you're right, you know, the Michigan Tech thing, and you know, Michigan Tech's had a nice year for Michigan Tech. Granted, you know, if you look...
They're under 500.
Well, they're under 500, but if you look at where they've come from, then, you know...
I'm not talking about Michigan Tech, I'm talking about the criteria.
No, I know, I agree with you wholeheartedly, is that Michigan Tech does not belong in that discussion.
Well, things will even out.
What's that?
Things will even out.
I know.
No, I mean, they will. I can't sit here and complain about what the standings look like now after how I opened this conversation. It's an end-of-the-season measure, so we have to wait till the end of the season.
Then we can talk about who gets hosed.
Yes, then we can talk about who gets hosed.
All right. So are we putting a moratorium on that then? No more?
I mean, it's kind of like the Trackler. I mean... It's nice to talk about, but it really doesn't matter till the end. So I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it.
The Tracker has a lot more bearing right now.
Well, yeah, because the Tracker is more cumulative.
Yeah, it's a lot more scientific.
yeah, it's real scientific. We split atoms when we put that thing together every week. I think we got a cyclotron over here that we're just speeding atoms up and trying to create fusion. You could tell the Trackler story.
No, it's
okay,
fine.
Okay, we'll save that for the... I think at the end of the year we should have a little bit of a... We should have, like, after the season's over, we should have an inside joke show.
Yeah, we can do that.
Where we kind of explain everything, so... But somebody needs to write this stuff down, like Trackler.
Trackler, my Huskies.
We should get some interns.
That's not a bad call. I'm gonna put that on there too.
The only problem with interns is we can't pay them any less than we get paid.
Exactly.
They'd have to give us money.
Well, what we can do is internship, enter on senior pay level. Entry-level pay rate equal to senior editor.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But we can't guarantee that you'll get to go to the Frozen Four.
I'm excited for the Frozen Four.
Yeah,
just
I am.
Throwing that out
there. I am too.
Because I really don't know what's going to happen.
I am too, but I'm depressed that there's less than 2 months left of hockey.
Yeah, we've got 2 weeks of regular season left in the East Gacy Hockey League, 3 weeks in every other league, pretty much.
CCHA also has 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah, because they expanded their playoffs too. So
yes,
it's getting down there.
It's gone fast.
Yes, editor Nate Ewell always used to celebrate this time of the year with the notebooks countdown. Only two more notebooks left to do.
Yeah. They are a grind. They are a grind.
And we'd like to thank our staff for cranking those out every week. They are they're certainly well done, but it's a lot of work.
Well, they're well done and poorly edited.
Yeah. So
another shout out.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, there you go. Yeah, I suck.
Anything else? Pitchers and catchers are reporting, I think.
Tomorrow for the Atlanta Braves, or Thursday, I should say, for the Atlanta Braves.
Did you guys hear the Red Sox signed somebody named Daisuke Matsuzaka?
Yeah, I heard about that.
The Iron Chef? He's that guy on that show Heroes, isn't he?
Did he play a BG?
Isn't he that goalie for the LA Kings?
I heard about it because Bob Norton said he prepped it.
Said he went to Ginsu school. What's the guy's name again?
Matsuzaka?
Daisuke? Or Daisuke? I'm not really sure. Somewhere along the line, his name changed pronunciations.
Does he speak English?
No, not a word.
Oh.
So he'll fit right in Boston.
Oh, God. I was going to say that's reminiscent of when I was working ESPN Sports Ticker for the Colorado Rockies games, and you had to go down to the locker rooms afterwards and, you know, basically get some quotes from, you know, one of the key players, plus they usually like the pitcher of record to say something. And one of the games that I did was the Rockies playing Montreal, the Expos. Remember them? And Hideki Arabu pitched for the...
That's debatable.
Yeah, I use the term loosely. There's quotes around pitched. Arabu pitched for the Expos, and I can't remember some other guy who didn't speak English. I think he was from Latin America somewhere. I can't remember for the life of me. Didn't speak English either. So you talk about some great quotes. I mean, these quotes just jump right off the page. I'm telling you, when you got to go through it. You know, Rabu had a translator, and he was a fat toad, by the way. And I think Nathy Perez was translating for the other guy. You know, he was Cuban. The other guy was Cuban. I can't remember who it was, though. Anyways.
And he was on the Rockies?
Yes.
So he went there to pitch, huh?
He'd have been better off in Cuba.
Yeah. Yeah, good times, that little rink. We'll have to have a baseball rinks podcast also.
A baseball what podcast?
Baseball rinks.
Ah, yes, yes.
Discuss our baseball rinks of favor.
Well, you know, once you've been to the Metrodome.
That is true. It is hard to beat.
Yes, it is.
First big league game is at Exhibition Stadium in Toronto.
Yeah, how did that work? How did that work? Did Ernie Witt?
Yeah, tractor pull was, going on in the outfield.
Was Ernie Witt catching?
I think he possibly was. I don't know. No, I think Garth Orange was catching.
Garth Orange. Oh, no. Kelly Gruber at third.
And Kelly Gruber was still in Syracuse. It was pre-Gruber time.
Who's
some good players, though.
Who's the best Blue Jay ever?
Ricky Henderson. Best Blue Jay ever, huh?
Rook, who's the best Blue Jay ever?
Devon White.
Tony Fernandez is in the mix.
He won a batting title.
Tony Fernandez is in the mix, and he's in that conversation.
I think you got to go with Dave Steeb.
George Bell is in the mix. Dave Steeb is in the mix. Fred McGriff is in the mix.
Yeah, Crime Dog's there.
Well, it's hard to say. A lot of those guys played only a little bit in Toronto.
Robbie Alomar.
Homer Bush.
Shea Hillenbrand.
he was a great Boston Red Sox.
Jesse Barfield.
Shea Hillenbrand began his professional career in Lowell, Massachusetts.
What's that?
What did you say?
I said Shea Hillenbrand began a professional baseball career in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Oh, he was a spinner?
He was. He was one of the originals.
Wow.
That's nice.
Joe Carter, he's got to be the best, doesn't he?
Yeah.
To me, Joe Carter's an Indian, though.
He did that whole thing.
No! Joe Carter's not an Indian.
Yes, he is, man. I don't know. I just, like, that's the thing about the Jays. They haven't had, a lifer. That's why I think Steve or Tom Hanke might be the answer. I bet Hanke's numbers are close. I mean, he had a lot of saves.
Yeah, he did. I think I'm going to go with Dave Steeb.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Maybe John Mayberry.
That's a good call. We'll see. But that'll be our summertime podcast.
You guys are sleeping on Candy Maldonado.
We are?
Absolutely.
Candy Maldonado. Yeah, he was a good Blue Jay. How much
John Holerud in his helmet.
He kind of looks like Bob the Builder.
But I'm laughing.
He does.
He does. He actually does.
John Holerud.
He's got a much sweeter stroke than Bob the Builder.
Yeah, he does.
He handles righties a lot better. He can go the opposite. He's got power to both gaps.
He was a doubles machine.
Yes, he was.
This might be the worst podcast ever.
No, it's a good one. podcast deterioration, it was exactly that.
Yeah.
Get our marks on everything. College Hockey Talk and podcast deterioration. With a birthday haiku. And Blue Jays.
What more do you really... I mean, that's... covered about six bases there.
So there you go. Thanks for listening to another Inch podcast. For Mike Adibis and Jeff Howe, I am Joe Blancheski signing off. Please keep reading Inch and enjoy any games you're attending this weekend.